Well, let me begin by welcoming all of our Atlanta area churches, and we're so glad that you're online with us if you're watching online. And what I thought I would do to get us started today is talk a little bit about the month of December. December's always a little bit different, and December's always very special in Atlanta, and it's certainly special for all of our churches. So I've never done this before, but I want to kind of give you a heads up because there's some specific opportunities I want to tell you about. We're going to put these up here. Today is December 4th. We'll get back to that in just a second. Next week, I'm going to preach a message called Uncomplicating Christmas. And next week's message is just a straight up gospel salvation, come to Jesus, make it all right with God message, okay? And we do that every once in a while. And I'm giving you a heads up. It's gonna be kind of have a Christmas twist, but the reason I'm giving you a heads up is many of you have been attending for weeks or months. Some of you have been attending for over a year, and you have come to the place where you finally, this is all beginning to make sense for you, but there's never been a moment in time where you have sort of officially placed your faith in Christ to become a Christ follower. And next Sunday, we're gonna give you a chance to do that. And the other reason I'm telling you, if you have friends who you just think, I just wish somebody would explain to them the gospel in the simplest of terms, next week it will be in the simplest of terms. So you can just give them a heads up that our pastor's doing a message especially for you, okay? So next Sunday's a great opportunity to invite a friend. Then on the 18th, we're gonna kind of have our typical devotional, practical Christmas message. I'm excited about that. It's called Random Christmas. This will be just sort of inspiration and encouragement to all of us who've basically been Christians for quite some time, but sometimes wonder about God's interaction and intervention in our life. And then on the 24th, and this is huge, the 24th is a Saturday, right? Because Christmas is on Sunday, and we're not gonna meet on Sunday, but we're gonna meet on Saturday. So for those of you that have been wondering, why don't we ever have Christmas Eve services? We're shifting the entire schedule just for you, okay? So on Saturday the 24th, if you normally come to the 9 o'clock service, then you'd come at 9 o'clock on Saturday, 11 o'clock, 11 o'clock on Saturday, 12:45 at North Point, whatever you do. Basically, we're shifting the entire schedule to Saturday. And on Sunday, you can stay home with your family and then we'll just be criticized by the media, but that lasts about 15 minutes and then they get on to something else. So anyway, so that's the upcoming schedule. Wanted you to know about that, especially next Sunday is a great opportunity to invite a friend, and the following Sunday as well. Now, I say all that because we've got some really exciting sermons coming up, and you have just experienced an incredible series of messages at Gwinnett Church and our other Atlantic campuses, area campuses, with our campus pastors. It's been great. And so between all that great preaching today, I'm not gonna do a sermon. I just need to talk to you about some stuff, okay? So if at the end of today, you get in the car and say, you know, that wasn't much of a sermon, I'm gonna let you know up front, this ain't much of a sermon, okay? This is just me talking to you, family. And if you are a guest and this is your first time with us, you could not have picked a better Sunday to drop in, because for the next few minutes, I want to talk a little bit about what we're doing as a church and give you kind of a heads up, because if you're thinking about making this your church home, either at Buckhead or Brownsbridge, here at Brownsbridge or North Point or Gwinnett or Watermark, wherever you are with us, this is kind of the insider stuff. So don't tell anybody, but we're glad that you're here to get an inside peek. Now, here's what I want to talk about. A few weeks ago, we launched this incredible thing where we basically are gonna give as much money and serve as many hours and give as much food as we could to our community called Be Rich. And you guys have been ridiculous, okay? You know that, okay? In fact, there's not a prouder pastor in the world than me right now. I just walk around and people walk up and say, I heard what your churches are doing. I'm going, are they great or what, okay? And I don't take any credit, because what's happened is so far beyond what any one individual would do. But just a quick review, and some of this information is new. I challenge you to give $500,000. You've given over $2 million. So stop already, okay? We've got all the money we need. And isn't that incredible? Yeah, you should give yourself a hand. And if you're new, the whole point of this is we have these Intersect partners where we just basically go out in the community and ask the question, who's doing a good job in our community, working with children, working with the poor, working with the homeless, working with people who are struggling in lots of different ways. And we've gone to them and said, hey, here's some money. We don't want anything in return. This is all for you. So we had about $1 million worth of projects. You've given $2 million for us to disperse in all of our communities. It's absolutely incredible. We ask if you would sign up for 8,000 hours of service in the community. 15,000 hours of service you've signed up for. And I kidded about people working off DUI. I hope that's not reflected in that number, okay? So we've gotten really, really, thousands of you have said, hey, I wanna serve in my community during a time when people are already busy. And then we did our big Mac Daddy food drive. We were trying to you know, collect about 25 tons of food. Last week, 41 tons of food, okay? Excuse me. This would feed about 5,000 people for an extended period of time. I have no idea how many people we can feed with 41 tons of food. But the point is, everything we've asked you to do, everything we've suggested, you've just gone, and here we are in the middle of, you know, people are saying it's not a recession. Some people say it's a recession. All we know is it's tough right now, you know. Some of you are struggling financially. A lot of people have less money than they've ever had before. College tuition's going up. And in the midst of all that, you gave all this money, you're serving all these hours, and you brought all this incredible, incredible food. And it's absolutely amazing. And again, I don't go around bragging, but I love the fact that people have heard about it. And one of the things I said to our staff, I said, when we do Be Rich this year, I don't want us to just be good, you know, to do good. I want us to be seen doing good. I want people to know that the church isn't all about gimme, 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 gimme. And the church isn't all about, well, when you die someday, maybe something good will happen to you. The church is the hands and the feet of Jesus in the community. And you have done an extraordinary, extraordinary job this season in terms of your generosity, your service, your gifts, feeding people. It's absolutely amazing. Again, if you're looking for a church home and you're wondering if this is it, you will never sit amongst a more generous, get it, community-minded, love God group of people. And that's been evidenced not simply in what they say and what they sing and what they proclaim, but in what they have done with their money, with their time, and with their energy. So all of that is absolutely, absolutely incredible. Now, what I call that is I call all of this, especially these financial numbers, we're going to call that for the purposes of today's discussion, giving 1.0. Giving 1.0. Giving 1.0 is this, and I love this. We absolutely love this. We were so energized. Remember the coolest part about the other Sunday when we were giving all the money were the iPads? Wasn't that incredible? And my father-in-law, 72, 73, and his wife, my mother-in-law, was getting her checkbook out. She was gonna write a check for Be Rich, and he got up and she said, where are you going? He said, I wanna go give on the iPad. So he stood in line for 15 minutes because he just thought, so there was so much energy and there was so much buzz. I had friends in church that Sunday who were not Christians. I knew what we were doing. I knew they would be kind of moved by that. So I said, you gotta come this Sunday. They're not Christians, never go to our church, probably won't ever return. They came that one Sunday and they told me later they stood in line for 10 or 15 minutes to give. So it was just an incredible, incredible Sunday, all this passion and energy around giving for others. That's giving 1.0. Giving 1.0 is giving directly to something that will help immediately. And we all love to do that. And that is partly an American thing, and that is partly a Christian thing. Because there was a time in the world before the United States was the United States when that kind of generosity, it's hard for us to imagine this, it just didn't exist. Because there was no value system that, you know, that caused people to feel compassion toward other people. But thanks to Christianity and a Judeo-Christian ethic that, you know, through Christianity spread all over the world and especially in this country, people in the United States, we have a conscience. And when we hear about people who are having a difficult time, there's something in us that says, I need to participate. But in some cases, it's giving directly, or in most cases, it's giving directly to help with someone immediately. And we're gonna continue doing this. And I don't want anything I say today to take away from what you've done, because we're gonna do it again. In fact, I was at Starbucks on Thursday, a guy walked in and he said, Andy, and he started talking about Be Rich. He said, I hope we can do that again. I said, we're gonna do that again. That is that we've actually been doing that for several years. It just got bigger this year, you know, for whatever reason. So yeah, we're gonna continue to do this. But when I got home Sunday, after, you know, we had this incredible Sunday and I saw people lined up and I heard about all the campuses exploded with generosity and people are giving money and writing checks and we got some big checks. One guy wrote a check. I mean, imagine, I'd love to be this wealthy. He showed up at church, we did the presentation, he got his checkbook out and wrote a check for $70,000. I'm like, okay, how long would it take you or the average person to prepare to write a check? I mean, most of us in our lives will never write a check for $70,000. He's just sitting in church going, I'd like to participate in that. 70 grand, boom, okay. I don't know, I've never met him. In fact, I think he was at Gwinnett Church on that Sunday night. So the point is, some incredible, 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 spontaneous, you know, give directly to something immediate kind of things happen. So when I'm at home that Sunday afternoon just thinking, wow, look what's happened. And I thought, well, you know, I know people are going to walk up to me during the week or in the weeks to come and say, hey, I heard what happened. And I immediately formulated my response to whatever they said in my mind. And here's what I decided I was going to say. And here's what I've said ever since that Sunday. When people walked up and said, hey, I heard your church like raised $1 million in a day, or, you know, I heard your church raised $1.5 million in 4 days, you know, because it came in so quickly. I decided on that Sunday, here's what I was gonna say. I was gonna ask them a question. And it's the question I wanna ask you. I decided I was gonna ask, hey, do you know how long it took us to raise $1 million in a day? Do you know how long it took us to raise $1 million? Do you know how long it took us to raise $1.5 million in 4 days? Do you know how long it took us to raise $2 million to give away to the community in 2 weeks? Do you know how long that took us? And of course, it's an odd question. Well, it took a day, no? Do you know how long it took us to raise that much money in a day? And the answer to the question that I was gonna give starting on that Sunday, and the answer I've been giving ever since, is this. It's taken us 16 years to be able to give $1 million away in a day. It's taken us 16 years to be able to give $1.5 million and to raise $1.5 million in 4 days. It's taken us 16 years to be able to generate 41 tons of food within a single weekend. It's taken us 16 years to manufacture 14 plus thousand hours of community service. And the reason it took us that long is because of a different kind of giving. Giving 1.0 is directly to something that will help immediately. I want to talk about giving 2.0. Giving 2.0 is why we were able and why you were able to give $1 million in a day. Because giving 2.0 goes back to the thousands of you who are in our churches today who for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, some of you like me for 16 years, have been giving at the 2.0 level. And the 2.0 level giving is simply this. I'm gonna give a percentage of my income to a local church I believe in so they can buy land, build buildings, hire staff, have incredible student programs, create small groups, curriculums, publish things, create environments, create things for my children, create things that my father wants to come to, my dad wants to come to, my husband wants to come to, my wife said she'll come back to church. They've recaptured the imagination of my middle school son, my daughter, my kids actually wanna go to church. Our family's better off than it's ever been before. Giving 2.0 is just that steady, plodding giving that says, you know what? I'm not here for the flash. I'm not here for something immediate. I'm not doing this because it feels good. I'm not doing it because it's emotional. I'm not doing it because the pastor gave us a rah-rah sermon and I was in tears and they showed pictures of starving kids and I just couldn't wait to give. I mean, I'm all for that kind of giving. That's how most Americans give. That's what happened on that incredible weekend a few weekends ago. But the reason Be Rich has been as successful as it has been, in addition to your kind of knee-jerk and my knee-jerk generosity on that day, which I'm all for, we're gonna do it again. The reason we were able to do what we did in a day is because of what many of you have been doing for years and years and years and years and years. You understand that there's a place for giving 1.0, but you understand that what created the context for our success for Be Rich is giving 2.0. It's just that steady plotting, percentage giving, tithing to a local church to create a group of churches in this city, a group of churches in this city that has incredible horsepower for goodwill in our community, for the gospel, and for reaching people with the message of Jesus Christ. Now, there's another way of thinking about this, and I think this kind of goes to the emotion for those of us especially who love to give, and for those of us who got caught up in that incredible day, and again, we're gonna do it again. And it's to think about it in terms of this way. There's also intervention giving and what we'll call prevention giving. Intervention giving and prevention giving. Intervention giving is the kind of giving where somebody's in a crisis, and you give to help them get out of crisis. We love to do that. Prevention giving is giving so that something that's bad that we wanna keep people out of never happens to begin with. Now, the problem is, in the United States of America, we lean more toward intervention than prevention in every area of our lives. Think about this. You get married, and people have given you books on, you know, here how to have a good marriage, and you had to go to a seminar on a good marriage, and people get married and they go, I don't need any of that. And people get married and they immediately get into bad relationship habits, bad marriage habits. And the marriage gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And then what do they decide to do? They decide they need some intervention. So they go see a counselor. Now, I don't do marriage counseling because I was terrible at it because I'm not a good listener. I kept wanting to interrupt and go, whatever. Okay, look, let me tell you what to do, okay? So I was a terrible counselor because counselors have to listen. And the thing is, after I heard about the first 5 or 6 minutes of the story, I thought, I've heard this 1,000 times. The names change, but there's only about 3 marriage problems, okay? And you know, the details change. And when you're having one, you think yours is unique. It's not, okay? You feel like, oh, we have a very specific issue. You don't, okay? So when I would listen to people talk about their marriage problems, and if you're a marriage counselor or in marriage and family counseling, you get this. The thing is, every time I would hear a story, this is what I would think. This is why I was terrible at it. I would think, didn't you see this coming? I mean, really? Okay, you're like never home for dinner, and you're never involved with your kids, and you wonder why your wife is cold and your kids don't love you. What? And they're like, I don't understand it. I'm like, what? I mean, most marriage issues, you can see them coming to my life. And you know what? They can be prevented, but we don't do preventative maintenance. We want intervention. I want a counselor to sit my wife down or my husband down and fix them. I want to stick my kid in counseling and fix them. So consequently, we aren't very good at prevention. We're not good at prevention financially either. This is why some of you, you know, the economy's tanked, but it's hit you harder than the average person because you have not practiced good financial discipline and good financial stewardship. So consequently, you know, you don't want to save money. You don't want to stay out of debt. You don't want to govern your spending habits. You know, you don't want to gear down. You don't want to live less on less than you make. You know, all those, just those practical things that keep people out of trouble. So what happens? Since you didn't do any preventative maintenance financially, all of a sudden you need intervention. You need a credit counselor. You need to consolidate your debt. Because Americans, we're not very good at thinking prevention. We think intervention. Same with our health. You don't exercise. So then you go to the doctor and say, well, isn't there something you can give me for that? Isn't there something you can give me for that? Is there a surgery I can have? I mean, can't we just fix this? I mean, I'll look at my calendar here. Yeah, I've got 4 days that I can be off of work. Can we just fix that? And the doctor's like, you know, you could have prevented this. You could have absolutely prevented it. It's like, no, prevention, I don't want to do prevention. I want intervention. I want a surgery and I want a pill. And if you don't give me the surgery or the pill, I'll go find somebody who will. Now, that's just how we think. It's not good. You know, you pay a price for it. That's the way we think. But unfortunately, we give that way too. We give that way too. We lean toward, as a culture, we lean toward intervention giving. We don't lean toward prevention giving. Let me define this for you. Intervention giving. It's emotional and the results are measurable. It's emotional because you see pictures of children, you hear stories, somebody gets up with a tearful story. It's emotional and the results are measurable. We're gonna feed 5,000 hungry people. We're gonna help 22, you know, families that need something for, you know, we're gonna intervene in the lives of 6 single mothers. I mean, it's emotional and it's always measurable. But prevention giving is neither. Prevention giving is not emotional. It's generally not measurable, but it's far, far, far superior. Let me ask you a question. Would you rather give to an organization that prevents child abuse or give to an organization that rescues kids from child abuse? Now, it's a trick question. The answer is both, isn't it? I would love to give. And when you show me, here's Felicia, she's in a difficult home. If you give to this organization, we're going to rescue her out of the home. Of course, I want to give to an organization that will rescue a child from an abusive situation. But then when I look at little Felicia in her eyes, I think, this should have been prevented. This should have never happened. Even though now she's safe and she's rescued, you know, the damage is done. The emotional scars are there. I wish this had never happened. So yes, I would love to give to an organization or to somebody that would keep this stuff from happening. The problem is you can't measure what's been prevented. You just can't measure it. It's not emotional. We all know there's a value there. But unfortunately, it's not emotional. And unfortunately, in most cases, you can't even measure it. See, here's my point today. Simply this, that when you give to a great church, it is preventative giving. That giving, systematic giving to a great church. When I say great church, I mean a church that understands the kind of things we understand, that does the kinds of things that we do. We don't play around. We don't come up with little sermonettes. I don't get an email from somebody, a bishop somewhere, and get up here on Sunday morning and read a little 12-minute devotional. We sing some songs we don't even like, and we feel like God gives us a check. We don't do that, okay? I'm talking about when you systematically give to a great church, a church that's on mission, that's in the community, that cares about the next generation of students, that cares about families, that cares about marriages. Giving, systematically giving to a great church is preventative giving. Now, I saw a great example of this yesterday. Yesterday, we had a reunion for all of our foster care families. About a year and a half ago, we started an initiative at North Point Community Church called Fostering Together. And we want to roll this out to all of our churches, but we're still trying to figure this out. You have to deal with DFACs. There's a lot of government agencies, so we're really trying to pilot this thing well. But yesterday, and Sandra and I have been involved in this from the beginning, yesterday, we got all the families together who've been a part of our Fostering Together initiative, and it was extremely emotional. In fact, if I wanted to raise some more money, I could just tell you stories from yesterday, and you would be getting your checkbooks out, and I'd be getting mine out too, okay? Because it was so powerful, so powerful. And so we all got together. We've had about 40 children who've been taken out of homes and placed into families in our church, and now they're in Waumbaland, and they're in Upstreet, and they're in Transit. Some of them are now in Extreme. Five of these children are actually being adopted into homes. I mean, the stories go on and on and on. So I'm sitting there yesterday just listening to stories, and we're talking about how to do a better job of that. And all the children came yesterday. Okay, so you have families with their biological children and their foster children, and we're doing Christmas pictures. So you have these precious little children. You have mixed race families. I mean, it is absolutely incredible how I love my church. But I got in the car and I drove away and I thought, you know, there it is again. See, I can measure that. I can come to you and say, hey, we have 40 kids that are with families, and here's how much it cost us to support the families that are fostering the kids. Here's how much it costs to help these families transition kids from foster care into adoption. Here's how much it costs. There's 40 kids or 5 kids being adopted. Here, you know, I can measure all that. Here's what I can't measure. Here's what we can't measure. We can't measure how many kids won't have to be taken out of homes because mom and dad never split up to begin with. We can't measure how many children won't be taken out of homes because mom never became a prescription drug addict because she was in a women's group. And when she began exhibiting those emotional issues, so women came around her and said, you know, prescription drugs is not going to solve this. We want to pray for you. We want to walk with you through this. We want to be your hands and feet of Jesus in your life. You don't need to go down that road. You can't measure the kids that haven't been taken out of their homes, can you? We can't measure the kids who weren't taken out of homes because dad didn't allow his alcoholism to destroy his life. We can't measure the number of families that didn't split apart because they're in church and they're listening to biblical principles being taught in a way they can embrace them and get their arms around them and do it. We can't measure the number of kids that won't be abused because the family was intact. The number of divorces that won't happen, dropping a mom below the poverty line and sending her into a world that's so dangerous for her kids and causing her to have to leave her home, leave her community, put her kids in a different school. We can't measure the results of that because it's preventative. But I'm telling you, in a great church that's getting it done, we prevent child abuse, divorce, alcoholism. The other thing I can't tell you is this. I can't tell you how many kids won't wreck their car into a guardrail or hit somebody head on because they were drinking and driving, because they're in an inside out group on Sunday afternoons. And some small group leader, many of you fill those ranks, show up on Sunday afternoon and pour into these kids. And even when the kids have difficulty at home, they have an advocate. They have somebody that comes along beside them and says, no, you don't need to make that decision. That's an unhealthy choice. That's an unwise choice. God has a plan for your life. Don't give your life away to something less than. We can't measure the results of that. We don't know how many young ladies won't become pregnant as teenagers because of what we do as a church. We don't know how many families won't be ripped apart because of what we do at a church. You can't measure it, but I guarantee you. I mean, you've heard the baptism stories. Some of you are part of those stories. What happens here is so powerful, and what happens in any local church that gets it done and understands this, it's so powerful. It is preventative, but you can't measure it. And it's not emotional. And I'm all for rescue. We will always be a church that rescues. But the power of the local church isn't the rescue. The power of the local church is what you can't measure. In terms of the human condition, it's what we together prevent. And those of you who are percentage givers, who like our family, you just give 10% off the top, you tithe, you help pay the bills, pay the staff, build the buildings, buy the land, pay the electricity, all that non-glamorous, non-sexy, non-cool, non-emotional stuff, you have no idea of the difference you've made because you have prevented the stories from ever being enacted. They're stories that will never be told because of what you've done and because of your commitment and because of the fact that you get it. That's the power of giving 2.0. So here's my challenge. And I told you this was coming. Some of you thought I forgot. Didn't you? You know what I'm talking about. At the end of Recovery Road, remember that a long time ago, Recovery Road? Don't you wish some people had been listening to that? At the end of Recovery Road, I said, you know what, 2012, I'm gonna challenge you to become tithers just for a year. For a year, I'm gonna challenge you to begin to give 10% of your income to your local church. And you know what? Again, some of you thought I forgot, and for some of you don't even know what that is. And what the other thing that was interesting, when I said that, I got letters and emails, mostly emails and some texts that said, we're in. We're not waiting to 2012. We absolutely get it. We don't wanna be a part of that 1.5% group of Americans that just give whatever's left over. We are in. And so as we head toward a new year, for those of you who are members and consider Brownsbridge and Buckhead Church and North Point Church and Watermark Church and Gwinnett Church and all of our churches, and those of you who watch online and this is your local church, I wanna challenge you to step it up just for 2012 and become a preventative giver, a giver 2.0, somebody who understands the value of giving to the local church. And if you're not a percentage giver, I want you to become a percentage giver. Now, the way we've talked about this for years is I've given you these three little words to help you kind of wrap your finances around: give, save, live. And what we've taught for years is give first, save second, live on the rest. Give first, save second, live on the rest. I mean, how complicated is that? Whenever you get paid, you give first. God, I'm putting this into your kingdom, what you're doing in the world. Then I'm gonna save some for my kingdom second, then we're gonna live on the rest. Many of you would be in a completely different place financially if you had given more money away. You would be in a better place financially if you'd given more money away, saved more money, and decided you were gonna live on what you actually had left over. We've been teaching that for years because at the end of the day, I don't want something from you. I want something for you. But when I think about our combined potential in terms of what we can do in this community, the different communities we represent in the world, it's staggering to me to think about the prevention we could do and what we could represent in terms of the cause of Christ in our community. So this isn't a new message. I'm just asking a bunch of you who have always sort of been the emotional givers. Every time we have a special cause, you love giving to that. I'm all for that. I do that myself. I'm asking all of you, if you would consider in 2012 to give first and to give first to your local church. And I wanna challenge you to consider tithing. Now, it's so interesting, whenever I use the word tithe, we get responses, what's tithing? Now, I grew up in the Baptist church, so this was just second nature for us. So I just real quick wanna explain tithing. Now, it's math. And I know in church, we don't normally do math. And I didn't do well in math. I've told some of you, in eighth grade, my first math test I took in the eighth grade, the teacher, I got the test back and it just said no written at the top. I'm not proud of that. No, it just said no. Nothing was marked wrong, just no. Second test, I got back from Miss Salyers. I still remember her. She's the only math teacher I remember, Miss Salyers. Second math test, no. What'd you get? No. I just gotta know. It's like, I'm not even gonna grade, this is so bad, okay? So I'm not good at math. But this is what tithing is. Now, tithing is an ancient term. It's an ancient term, and it referred to 10% of produce. Back in the old days, it was 10% of your flock, 10% of your grain, 10% of your wheat, 10% of your corn, 10% of your silver, 10% of your gold. Now it simply just represents 10% of your income. And here's what I'm asking you to do. And you know, I won't ask you to do something I haven't done. I haven't been doing since the beginning. I'm asking you that every time you get 10 of these, to take one and to say, God, I'm gonna invest this in how your church prevents lives from being destroyed. This is my preventative investment. Not only are people gonna go to heaven, not only are people's eternal lives gonna be changed, because we so believe that, I want to invest in my local church. This is my investment in the future of the next generation of teenagers, of middle schoolers. This is the investment in the next generation of families, of marriages. This is an investment in the next generation of people who aren't going to drop below the poverty line because of what they learn in their local church. And God, thank you for allowing me to manage 10. I want to take one. And I want to put it in circulation through my local church that's getting it done on the ground in the community for Jesus' sake. Now, let me go over that again because that's math and that's complicated, okay? Every time you get 10 of these, you take one. And you know what's so interesting about this? And you've heard me say this before. When you think about 10 $1 bills, that's nothing, is it? And you know why it's nothing? Because what can you do with that anyway, right? As soon as these become $10 bills, it's an iTunes gift card, but okay, $10, you know. And as soon as these become $20 bills, but when these become $100 bills, so you can do something with $100. But what's the difference? When these become $1,000 bills, but what's the difference? When these begin to represent tens of thousands of dollars for some of you, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, now you're asking me to give away thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to the local church. Hey, what's the difference really? Because what an incredible opportunity you have. And you know what? Even if you're not convinced, even if you've never done this before, even if you wonder, well, I'm not sure the church can manage all the money I'd give it. Hey, I'm just asking you, for the year 2012, would you tithe to your local church? Because we have some amazing, amazing things we're gonna be able to do. Part of the reason I wanna do this in 2012 is because the economy's bad and I think it gives us opportunity. But the other thing is this, we believe in the local church. In fact, you may not know this, as a part of this church, as a part of one of our churches, you are part of an organization that creates churches. That's what we do now. We create churches that unchurched people love to attend. That's what we do. We create churches that unchurched people love to attend, and you help us do that. And as we begin to get more and more financially generous, not in terms of emotional generosity, but steady plotting, percentage giving, tithing, our opportunity to create churches that unchurched people love to attend, it just increases. Right now, we have a group of people watching today at Watermark Church. Hello, Watermark Church. They're meeting in a school. They have an opportunity to renovate an empty part of that school. The school's allowed us to do this, and they're in the midst of a fundraising campaign to create space for children. And you know what? It's a lot of money, but when I think about how large we are, if many of you who have never been percentage givers, you don't have to give a lot. You simply decide, I'm gonna give 10% of my money to what God's doing through my local church. We can help the people at Watermark get that job done. And for those of you who are giving generously at Watermark to fill out that empty shell space, it's gonna be incredible. But one day, we're gonna go out to Cherokee County, and we're gonna have to buy a piece of property. We're gonna build a building like the one I'm in here at Browns Bridge Community Church. And we're gonna prevent all kinds of things in that community, and we'll never know what we prevented. But prevention giving is superior to intervention giving. We've got a group in Gwinnett. They're meeting at the Gwinnett Center. Hey, Gwinnett Church, wanna say hey to you guys. Love you guys out there. And they're meeting in rented facilities, and we already bought property for them. One day we're gonna have to build a building. And typically when churches get to this position, they go into a 3-year capital campaign. We may have to do this, but we don't have to do that. If those of you who call our churches your church home decide, you know what? I'm not gonna wait to be asked. I'm not gonna wait to be begged. I don't need to see a giving pyramid. I'm just gonna take one of every 10 God gives me and say, you know what? I believe in the local church. I believe in what God's doing through my local church, and I'm willing to be a part of it. And if you will do that, if you will step it up, if you decide I'm not gonna be the emotional giver, I'm not gonna be the 1.5% giver that I find out at the end when I do my taxes by accident that I gave 1.5%. I'm gonna be that give, save, live on the rest person. I'm gonna give first. I'm telling you, our potential together in terms of creating churches and preventing heartache and preventing homelessness and preventing unforeseen disaster in families and preventing alcoholism and preventing drug addiction and preventing unwanted pregnancies, preventing all of those things, is absolutely, absolutely incredible. Now, I wanna make this as easy for you as possible. That's why we're not starting next week. I'm giving you a month to consider and to pray about what God would have you to do. Two things to make this simple for you is we set it up to where you can do this online real easy. And some of you love to do this. I don't do this because I still like writing a check to my local church. But we've set it up, if you go to npmgive.org, you can have automatic withdrawal from your checking account. That doesn't sound very spiritual, but for some of you, you know you'll never do this unless you let us help you. And so we've set this up. You go to this, and you know what? The reason we did this, about 2 years ago, somebody suggested this and I was against it. I thought, no, that's a bad idea. I want people to have to feel writing that check or even doing it online. And so many people said, you know what? you know, I intend to do it, but if you'll make it easier for me. So we set this up. You go to this website, click your local church, set it up, and we will help make it easy for you. Then the other thing we're gonna do, and I know this is weird what I'm about to say, and I got this idea from Sean C. at Athens Church. We'll do this. See, I don't wanna make life hard for you. I really don't. I mean, you gotta know that. So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna work it out. We're not finished with this part yet. So that if halfway through the year, or you get to the end of next year and you have a big financial crisis, now don't tell anybody this, we'll just give you your money back. And we're gonna work it out so it's not awkward. You don't have to call me at my house, okay, and say, Andy, I finally got through. We're not gonna do that, okay? We're gonna figure out a way. If you hit a bump, if you hit a crisis, in other words, we're not trying to take money from you. We, you know, and the thing is, you understand this. You never miss money that you give. I miss money that I misinvested. I miss money that I threw away on buying stuff I didn't need. But you never miss money that you give away. But in just in case, if you hit a bump, we'll just give it back to you. I promise. We're going to do that because we want you to participate. We want you to feel what you feel when you realize that I'm part of something way bigger than myself. You're going to help us create more opportunities for giving 1.0 because you're going to become a giving 2.0. participant. Now, in closing, here's why I didn't really have a passage of scripture today, and I feel weird doing that. Let me explain why. See, there's, as a preacher, you know, when you have an idea for a message or something you want to say, especially as a pastor to, you know, all of our churches, the temptation is always, where's that in the Bible? Where can I find that in the Bible? I know what I want to say. I wonder where there's a verse that will support my good idea, okay? Preachers do that. I hate to tell you that. They do it all the time. That's why so many preachers have so many different verses from all over the Bible because they can't find one that really says what they're trying to say, okay? That's why our communicators, we take a passage and we take it in deep. You know, we want you to understand it. So as I was preparing for today, here was my dilemma. I thought, you know, I could get up there and say, well, if you'll give God one, God will give you 10. If you give God 10, God will give you 100. You know, there's that angle. It's not in the Bible, but a lot of preachers have made a lot of money preaching that kind of message, okay? Because I don't think it's true. I think God's already given you 10. He's just trying to get his one, okay? God's already given you 100. He's just trying to get his 10, okay? God's way ahead, okay? Now, in fact, if we believe what we say we believe as Christians, God has given us his son, Jesus. Why would he have to give us $10 because we gave him a dollar? I mean, it's foolish. Plus, just a little heads up. For the preachers who preach that, here's what I always wonder. If I really believed that if I gave God a dollar, he'd give me 10, every Sunday I would stand outside of our church and I would be handing out money. Here's 10 for you, here's 10 because God's gonna give me 100, okay? So nobody really believes that. So I couldn't go to those verses and they're kind of hard to find, but you know, if you look at them sideways, you can find some verses that say, if you give God 10, he'll give you 100. So I could have done that, didn't wanna do that. Then the other option was to come in here and say, you know what? If you give to your local church, you'll have treasure in heaven. And you know what? You will. I mean, Jesus was very clear about that, but that's not what this is about. Then I could have said what I grew up hearing. The Bible teaches it. I believe it. Tithing. The Bible teaches it. I believe it. Tithing. The every single Sunday, my dad, and I mean, he was awesome. He would hold up his own envelope and we'd all say it together. The Bible teaches it. I believe it. Tithing. And we all tithe. And I don't regret that for one. That's how I learned to give. And I could have said, you need to do this because God says to do it. And that's true, but that's not really this either. And then I could have said this, and I believe this, I could have said, you know what? If you invest in God's kingdom, God will invest in yours. That the invitation for God to get involved in your personal finances is to trust him with your personal finances. I believe that. The scripture clearly teaches that. But today's not even about that. Then I could have come in here and said, you know what? Friends, oh friends, things are tough, you know, and you know how things are financially and the giving's down, and if you don't give, we're gonna have to start laying off staff and we're gonna have to unscrew every other light bulb in the hallway and bring your own diapers and we can't feed your kids, you know, and we're gonna, you know, and you know, try to guilt you, but that'd just be a lie, okay? So I couldn't do that. So here's what today is about. The church is the hope of the world because Jesus is the hope of the world. And what an awesome privilege it is to take a percentage of anything he allows me to manage and to place it back into a local church that's getting the job done in a community, both for eternity and in this life. what a privilege it is to give. And I just want you to do it for that reason. I don't want to come in here and say, well, if you'll do this, here's what God will do for you. God may not do anything for you personally because you decide to give a percentage to this church. You may never reap any personal reward for that. But together, we will continue to make a significant difference, and we will prevent the things that so many people give their money to try to intervene in and rescue people from. Because percentage giving and tithing to a local church, a good local church, is the best investment financially you can make in terms of making an impact in a local community and in this world. And that's why, and I'm not bragging, I'm just, you know this. That's why if none of you do this, I'm gonna continue doing it. I will always tithe to whatever local church I attend, and I'll tell you why. Because I grew up in the church. And I'm telling you, the church saved my life. See, if I begin to imagine my potential for evil and my potential for sin and my potential for irresponsibility and my potential for immorality and my potential for a lack of discipline, and I extract from my childhood everything I learned in the local church, everything that was modeled for me in the local church, everything I was taught in the local church, the accountability I had in the local church, the friends I had in, if I were to suddenly extract from my life, knowing me, all the benefits of growing up in the local church, I can't imagine where I would be today. But you see, there's no way to measure what the local church prevented me from doing. And my friends, there is no way to measure what the local church has prevented you or your children or your grandchildren from experiencing in this life. So I'm in. I've always been in. By God's grace, I'll always be in. I just want more of you to join me and my family and the thousands of families that you're sitting around in all our local churches who've been doing this year after year after year. Let's not be simply intervention givers. We'll do that once or twice a year. Let's be prevention givers who understand the value of the local church, who understand what God is up to in the local church. Let's do something so extraordinary that it lights a fire in other local churches in our community and in our country and all around the world. Let's subscribe to Giving 2.0. And even if we don't receive anything personally, I think we will be blown away corporately at all that God will do in and through our local churches. That wasn't much of a sermon, but I'm telling you what, I could not be more excited about what God is doing in our local church and what he could do potentially through our church together. So you think about it. You think about it. You've got a few weeks to think about it. You pray about it. I'm not trying to guilt you by saying pray about it. I want you to pray about it. Husbands, listen to your wives on this one. They know. They understand. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, thank you so much just for the freedom to talk about these things and not worry about repercussions. Thank you for what you have prevented in this community, in the Buckhead Church community, all around Alpharetta and Dunwoody and Father Sandy Springs and now up in the Watermark up in Cherokee County and Forsyth County and Gwinnett County. Thank you for kids that'll never know the pain that otherwise they would have known. Thank you that there are kids who would never know the homelessness that otherwise they may have known. Thank you for marriages that didn't end in divorce that we'll never know about. Father, we don't know. But enough of us have been on the edge of all of that to understand the power of the gospel and the power of the accountability and the teaching that comes through a good church. So help us to be a great church. Help us to expand our influence in a way that honors you and preserves our nation. So give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we've just heard. Give us the courage to do it. And Father, do something extraordinary for your kingdom's sake and for your glory's sake. And that's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.